The Navigators is an international, interdenominational Christian organization whose objective is to help fulfill Christ's commission to make disciples of all nations. They individually teach the basics of the Christian life to new believers, who then teach others. They work on campuses, military bases, and among lay men and women on every continent.
In this session regarding communication, we have been discussing up to this point the primary conditions, which include recognizing the importance, commitment, and courage. And we are in the process of discussing personal qualities. Continuing with these personal qualities, the third one I would like to suggest is that we should be disciplined listeners. Disciplined listeners. Proverbs 13:3 speaks to this very clearly. He who guards his mouth preserves his life. He who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. To take time to guard our statements and listen to what the other person has to say. I think one of the things that I find happens quite a bit as we try to listen to someone else is that what they say triggers something in our thinking, and so the next thing we want to do is express back to them the thing that's been triggered in our thinking. And so we end up by saying something like, well, you know, that reminds me of a certain situation, and we start to talk about that, and before long we've gotten off the track. Instead of listening, you see, we want to communicate something from our point. And I think that we must be careful not to allow that. This is where discipline comes in. But to be willing to really listen. Someone has suggested it's listening with the third ear. Trying to listen to the underlying feeling. This is basically the concept of empathy. Trying to enter into that situation, to live where they live and sit where they sit, and try to appreciate what they're trying to say as well as what they're actually saying. Now, in order for this to be assured, I'm a great believer in asking questions if I'm not certain. So have the courage to ask a question when you aren't certain of the implication or not certain whether you've understood. It isn't a matter of whether they've stated it clearly or not. It's a matter of whether you have understood clearly or not. And so I find it very easy and not difficult at all to say to my wife or to someone with whom I'm counseling, well, look, I'm sorry, but I'm not sure I understand what you just tried to say. Now, I'm confident that you expressed it clearly, but somehow I wasn't able to understand it. Could you say it to me in a different way? Now, that does something for both of us. It forces them to rethink what they've said. It also helps me, hopefully, to understand it more clearly. So, don't be reluctant to ask questions. The classic cartoon that communicates the difficulty that there is sometimes in this matter of listening and understanding is this of the husband and wife with that well-known statement which is almost impossible to understand. I know you believe you understand what you think I said, but I'm not sure you realize that what you heard is not what I meant. Now that gets pretty confusing just to try and read and understand. But that is actually what happens in much of our communication, because time is not taken to adequately communicate or ask questions regarding what is meant by what is being said. I think another thing we need to guard against in this matter of being disciplined listeners is a conditioned self-defense. Now, let me explain what I mean. In the normal process of life, half of our time is spent listening to a variety of voices. They may be our teachers at school, our bosses at work, our co-laborers at work that just go on and on chattering endlessly, salesmen who are trying to get our attention, TV commercials, the commercials on the radio as you're driving in the car, and there is a certain natural defensiveness which we build up where we're just constantly tuning things out of our thinking processes. I remember talking with one young man. I was visiting his city, and it's one of the cities where they have a radio station dedicated entirely to news. And there are several in the United States now, of course. And all day long, 24 hours a day, they're just giving the news. And they keep it up to date, and much of it is repetitious. And I asked him if he ever listened to it. He said, oh, yes. Used to listen to it all the time. He said, had it on my car radio. When I drive to work, I'd turn it on and listen. I said, do you still? Well, he says, yeah, I still turn it on, but I don't listen anymore. You see, he had gotten so accustomed, and this is very true. You've had the same experience. After hearing certain things, they're there, and you couldn't care less that it's being said. There's something we do. We turn off that listening capacity. Now, this happens in marital communication a great deal, particularly where the wife is desirous of expressing details, things that seem to be important to her. And this morning in the discussion group, this came up. Now, the reason that that is dangerous is that it has two basic qualities that are basically destructive. One, you begin tuning out this chatter level, if I can call it that. And the danger is that in the process of that chatter level, something is said that is really important. But because you've sort of tuned your mind out, you don't hear that. It gets by you. And a communication breakdown begins to develop. Because she feels she expressed it. In the middle of these other things, she said it. But the husband, sort of half listening, didn't catch it. And immediately you have the perfect backdrop for a communication breakdown. Another detrimental factor to that kind of listening is that if you maintain a level of communication regarding inconsequential things, which are important but not critical, if you do not maintain that kind of communication, then when the time for meaningful communication comes on something that does need attention, communication is not going to be there. This happens a great deal, by the way, in parent-children relationships. And parents come to me when their children are 12 and 14, and they say, how do you develop communication with your children? It's pretty difficult by the time they're that age, if you haven't been willing to listen to them back through the years. The point I'm making is that that chatter level, if we want to call it that, that communication of what seems to be incidental, non-critical information is important for two reasons. Something may appear in the middle of that we should listen to. Secondly, it maintains a level of communication which is open so that when we need it, we're able to utilize it. The facts are, it has been proven that we can listen five times as fast as we can speak, or as anyone can speak. So what happens normally is that while you're speaking, I'm listening with one-fifth of my attention and four-fifths are wool gathering, if I'm not careful. I'm thinking about my next appointment. I'm thinking about what I'm going to do this afternoon. I'm thinking about what I'd like to be doing rather than talking to you, and so forth. In other words, four-fifths of my mind are available for all kinds of things unless I discipline them. Unless I discipline my mind and discipline those thought processes. But the facts are that our mind can wander very easily. And we need to be very careful about that. I mentioned this morning the idea of eye contact. The importance of eye contact. The discipline of eye contact in listening. Have you ever talked to someone and had them continually looking over your shoulder? looking somewhere else, and you're trying to talk to them, and their eyes keep wandering and shifting around, after a few seconds of that, you wonder if they're really paying attention to what you're saying or not. On one or two occasions, I have experimented, not very kindly perhaps, but just to see if it's true. And I've kept talking at the same level of conversation without varying the tone and changed subjects completely and gone to a totally different subject and just kept talking. And the person keeps nodding and all the rest of it. And that's, you know, a very clear indication of what's going on in their mind. So, listening is a very important part. It requires a great deal of discipline. Now, just one or two other warnings about listening. One or two other warnings about listening. First, the longer we are married, the better we get to know one another, and therefore, the more acquainted we are with expression patterns. Expression patterns. And so, our wife or our husband begins to express themselves in some way, and because we have heard them say something similar many times in the past, we assume that we know what they're going to say. And we've broken down the communication. Take, for example, the illustration of a man coming home and beginning to talk to his wife about difficulties that he's had at the job today. Now, he's discussed this or at least mentioned this on many other occasions. And all of a sudden she says, well, here we go again, same old story. So she kind of tunes in half-heartedly and lets him go talking about this difficulty he's encountering. Only this time he's serious. This time he's having a real crisis and he needs some help. But because she has become so accustomed to that particular vein or way of talking, she assumes that it's just going to be like the last time. Now, this requires discipline. I'm aware of that. The point I'm making is there can come a time when he is serious and when he needs a listening ear. So be careful that we not allow these conditioned patterns just because we get to know each other so well. A second warning about listening habits is be careful about selective listening. There are certain words that we call tune-out words. For example, money. Wife says, you know, I need more money for groceries. Click off the receiver, and she keeps talking about it, but he tunes her out. Or, you know, I think we ought to go visit my mother. Click off the receiver, and he tunes it out. Or she might say, let me tell you what happened at the ladies' club today. Oh, great, I'd like to hear it. Off goes the receiver, and there she goes. Or he says, let me tell you about the golf game we had today. Oh, good, I'd like to hear about your golf game. Off goes the receiver, and she keeps doing the things in the kitchen, and he's telling about what happened on the fourth hole, and she doesn't know where the fourth hole is. But, you see, there are certain ways we tune each other out, words that we use that way. Listening is a very great discipline. This is what I'm trying to suggest. The second major point that I want to try and touch on in this matter of communication is the purpose or the purposes of communication. Psalm 27:17 and 28:23 present the idea of developing or strengthening relationships. Developing or strengthening relationships. And this is a very real product of communication. Not only our relationship in marriage, but our relationship in the body of Christ, our interpersonal relationships. A willingness to communicate, a willingness to discuss, to open up, to talk. Secondly, another purpose is personal development. We've talked about Proverbs 25:28 being a basic passage on self-control. Communication demands a great deal of self-control. Controlling my emotions, controlling my expressions, controlling my thoughts, controlling my listening patterns. Real communication is a fantastic tool in self, in the development of self-control. Also, as far as personal development is concerned, it forces me to be honest and objective if I'm going to communicate. Proverbs 18:13 and 18:17 discuss or present thoughts in this area. 18:13, which I believe we've looked at, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and his shame. Communication demands that I develop the kind of self-control that forces me to listen and gather the right information before I arrive at conclusions. And verse 17 of the same chapter, 18 of Proverbs, he who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. And so there is a personal development of honesty and objectivity that is enforced if I am willing to be a communicator in the strict sense of the word. A third purpose of communication is to resolve conflicts as they arise. Ephesians 4:26. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. As we stated earlier, in another version says, don't sin by nursing your grudge. And so we keep short accounts. Communication forces us to keep short accounts. The moment we sense a strained relationship, tension, according to the Word of God from Matthew 5:23 and 24, which we've looked at, we are to go and be reconciled with our brother. And so one of the purposes of communication is to resolve conflicts as they arise before they develop and possibly become problems. Fourth, and very practically, communications is purposeful in providing information for the smooth functioning of a family. Many times, the reason for the disruptions and ineffectiveness that there is in a family is just a lack of information. It has not been communicated. When someone is being invited for a meal, or when you're planning an evening to spend with some friends, or whatever it might be, if this is not communicated, when the moment arises, and you tell your wife at 6:30, by the way, at 7:30 this evening, the Smiths are coming over for dessert. Well, you know how that can disrupt things in your home. Information. Just basic information to keep things functioning smoothly. Or you have one car available, and you're planning to use it for a certain thing, when your wife says, oh, by the way, I have an appointment at the hairdresser at 2 o'clock, the very hour that you had your appointment. Now, that doesn't make for smooth functioning in a home. So you have to kind of make sure that you are communicating and passing on information that is helpful in solving these issues before they become conflicts. The same thing is true. Point five, another purpose is for decision making. And we needn't discuss this because we've already presented it in another section, but I put it into this context. And finally, communication is purposeful for the simple and very real purpose of deepening the enjoyment of one another. When we communicate as we should, we learn to enjoy facets of the other person's personality that we may never observe through very quick, brief encounters. To take time to really talk to someone is a delightful experience. I find that every time I can sit for a period of time and discuss things with an individual, I pick up new facets of their personality. And it becomes a much more enjoyable and delightful experience just to get to know them in that way. One of the real purposes of communication. Third major point, what are some of the problems in communication? Well, first of all, the Bible tells us that the first one is a human heart. Jeremiah 17:9, which we've quoted, Isaiah 53:6, all we like sheep have gone astray. We have turned everyone to his own way. There's one of the problems. Everybody is seeking their own way. And so, we're not very willing or very quick to want to communicate, to want to express to someone else what we're thinking. And then John 3:19 and 20. John 3:19 and 20, where it talks about men loving darkness rather than light. They don't want to bring their thoughts out into the open. We'd rather keep them hidden. Communication forces these thoughts to come out. This is one of the major problems in communication, just the condition of the human heart. We are self-centered. We are self-protective. Another problem is language. I learned something recently that is staggering. The dictionary lists 14,000 meanings for the 500 most commonly used words that we normally occupy in conversation. 14,000 meanings for 500 words, which means about 28 meanings per word. The problem then is to know which one of those you are utilizing when you use a given word in seeking to express yourself. And if I'm not certain, then it behooves me to make sure that I find out what it is you're trying to communicate. Just the language in itself, our English language with which we claim to be so familiar, can be a barrier or a problem in communication. Third, fears and apprehensions regarding judgment or rejection, regarding the betrayal of information that we share, just fears. Another fear is one that was expressed earlier, and that is that you may lose some of your admiration for me if you get to know me too well. So I'd rather keep you sort of believing that I'm something I'm not. That's one of the problems in good communication, one of the barriers to communication. Another problem from Proverbs 13:10 and 10:19 is the problem of defensiveness. Defensiveness. Proverbs 13:10 says, "By insolence the heedless makes strife." By insolence, the heedless make strife. In another version, it says that pride is the basic reason for contention. Pride is what causes contention. This defensiveness, this pride that refuses to admit that I'm wrong or to expose myself to someone else. And then I mentioned Proverbs 10:19 as well. Another problem, and this one comes up continually, and that is recalling past failures of the other person. You keep bringing things up that they did in the past, places where they failed in the past. Little words, a little innuendo, just a little thought that keeps bringing up that ghost from the past. I remember one time recently, we were visiting our daughter and son-in-law and our two grandsons. They were living here in the city. And our daughter, Sandy, had been out in the backyard, and she and her two sons had found a robin's egg right on the grass. Apparently, Mother Robin just wasn't able to make it to the nest or something, and decided to unload there. And so it was perfectly safe, no cracks, nothing, no damage. So they picked it up carefully and took it in the house. And Sandy and Don are the kind of people that enjoy all this nature stuff, and they read books about it, and they dissect frogs, you know, and all these things that are so interesting to them. And we're glad they enjoy that. And so Sandy and the boys took it up and they made a little cotton nest. And she got her books out and read about robin's eggs and how warm they should be kept. And she put a thermometer there and a lamp at the right height to keep the temperature right. And she had it all set up and the boys were proud as punch. And we went to see them that afternoon. And of course, the first thing they did is, "Grandpa, come and see." So up we went into the room where they had this. And here was this laboratory set up, you know. But the interesting thing was, right at the front, she had printed a little sign. It said, "Shh, be quiet. I'm happening. I'm happening." I thought, oh, I would like to wear a sign like that on the front of me and on the back too, so that every time you see me, you'll remember I'm happening. I haven't finished. I'm in the process, just as you are. And we're learning. We are being conformed to the image of His Son. It's a lifelong process. But you see, if we could accept one another on that basis, rather than always calling up past failures. Yes, we failed. Yes, we could have done better. But it happened. We'll put it aside and we'll live in the present and plan for the future by the grace of God. And then, of course, another problem is the whole area of nonverbal communication. And we can't go into that to a great degree, but you know what I'm talking about. Facial expressions, posture, such a thing as a sigh. The husband comes, he's excited, he wants to tell his wife something, and she goes, and he says, "Well, yeah, I can understand. Okay, I'll tell you later." And that's it. Nonverbal communication. I heard about one fella, man who knows him very well, said, "You know, that particular man, as soon as he puts his arms over his head, you might as well stop talking. That's a signal. He's not listening anymore." Somehow he picked that up very wisely. There are all kinds of nonverbal communications. And we need to learn not only which are we giving off, but how to interpret the ones we're receiving. How do we do that? By asking questions? By calling it to their attention? If I see an expression on Florine that I'm not certain of, I'll just say, "Sweetheart, does that mean you're interested or not interested? Is that expression indicative of a positive response, or would you rather not talk about that right now?" If I don't ask, how am I going to know? And if I don't know, I assume something wrong. And the moment that I make a wrong assumption, we have a communication breakdown. In order to avoid a breakdown, I'd far rather ask questions and clarify. But the whole area of nonverbal communication. I told you that I pick up all kinds of it just watching you. When I say something that some of you agree with, your eyes light up. Some of you may even nod a little bit. Others sit there and just kind of look. And I think, well, okay, I'll try and say something that'll turn them on. But you see, there's constant expression going on. Put your arms down from behind your head. I saw that. All right. Very quickly then, to terminate, just a few principles, further principles of communication from beginning with Luke 6:31. Which is a passage that I think is a classic, not only regarding communication, but the whole spectrum of interpersonal relationships. "And as you wish that men would do to you, so do to them." As you wish that men would do to you, so do to them. So the first principle is mutual consideration. Again, Philippians 2:3-4. Mutual consideration. Communication that's effective demands this. The second principle that I would like to share with you and ask you to consider is the example of Christ. And of course, in Jesus we see the ideal communicator, but there are three things that I want to point out about the life of Jesus. First of all, the matter of acceptance.
Now, acceptance does not imply approval. Remember that. We don't necessarily accept a person on the basis of the fact that we approve of everything they're doing.
This is true in any interpersonal relationship. But take the story in John 8 as a perfect illustration of this. The woman taken in adultery who was brought to Jesus. And the delightful way in which he handles that situation. And as they bring her and literally throw her at his feet and condemn her, and they say, Moses said we should stone her. What do you say? Jesus said, Moses was right and you're right. Let's do it. And the one among you without sin, pick up the rock and throw it first. And of course, you remember the story. No one did. And when they were all gone, Jesus gently and kindly lifts her to her feet and looks into her eyes. And he says, now, where are the ones that accused you? Does no one accuse you? And she said, no one, Lord. They're all gone. And then Jesus made the statement, neither do I accuse you or condemn you. There's acceptance. Go and sin no more. There is a lack of approval. I accept you, even if I cannot approve of what you're doing. But the point I'm making is, in the life of Jesus, we see acceptance continually. The gamut of his relationships. The second thing we see is the matter of empathy. How many times do you read in Scripture that the heart of the Lord was moved with compassion? He was moved with compassion toward this situation, toward that person, toward the widow who he encountered as they walked in the funeral procession going out to bury her only son. Toward the centurion who came to ask regarding his daughter. Empathy, compassion. His heart was moved continually. And I pray that we will pray that God will help us and that we will be willing to give ourselves to people and to sense what they sense and to have the compassion to some degree that Jesus demonstrated. And then finally, honesty. Honesty. In John 4 with the woman at the well, we see him dealing honestly. He didn't back off. He was very direct in his manner of speaking with her. And as a result, he was communicating at the area and the level of her need. There was honesty. So we have three qualities in the life of Jesus. The first one, acceptance. The second, empathy. And the third one, honesty. And then finally, this last principle. And we've touched on it, but I reemphasize it. And that is the whole matter of personal discipline in communication. Now, the reason I mention it at the end of our presentation is that it is all based, to go back to what we originally said, am I really convinced that this is important? And if I am I willing to learn to discipline myself in the areas that I must in order to learn to communicate? To be honest, to be open, to listen, to expose myself, etc. Am I willing to communicate on a daily basis, not just putting aside a period of time occasionally, but a running communication with my family, with my wife, with my children, a running communication, taking advantage of the few moments that appear, a few minutes that set themselves off here, and taking advantage of that time to communicate in quality, even though it may not be in quantity. To communicate in depth and meaningfully with that person as the opportunity presents itself. Communicating daily on a running basis and then on deeper issues when necessary. And then finally, for you in this seminar, you who are married, let me remind you, there are many, many ways to communicate, I love you. And this is something that we need to communicate more and more to one another. Verbally, yes, that's important. But a glance can say, I love you. A playful touch, properly done, can say, I love you. A nod across the room, an expression of the eyes that communicates between the two of you,
There are many, many ways in which this can happen. And I ask you and I encourage you to develop them and to use them. The language of love is a delightful experience. It's a mutually edifying and a mutually developmental experience. And this whole gamut of communication is an exciting adventure. I challenge you. I challenge you, as you never have before, to embark on this voyage of communication. Explore it, utilize it, enjoy it. And I guarantee that you will be the reaper of beneficial results.